This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, end-of-life planning. Tough to do, but much needed. First up, what plants have been proven to do well in our area? The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden will have the answers when it presents its annual Plant Trials Day Symposium August 31st. Here to give us a preview of Plant Trials Day is one of this year's speakers, researcher and author Dr. Alan Armitage. His latest book is Of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots, the stories behind the common names of some of our favorite plants. Also joining us is Cincinnati Zoo horticulturist and Taking Root Chairman Scott Berline. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Alan and Scott, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Scott, what is Plant Trials Day? How did that get it, and how did it get its start?
It got started with a conversation between Steve Foltz, my director, our director, and myself, and just talking about the wealth of knowledge that we were privy to, just by growing the many plants that we grow at the zoo, and we put a lot of effort into growing a lot of diversity of different plants, And it's always been a little bit of a riddle on how you get that information out there, and we thought a symposium would be an awfully good way.
How do you do a trialing for a plant? What's the process for that?
You beg and plead for free plants from the growers.
so you can experiment with them?
Yes. And they send you some, and you grow them, and you watch them, and the ones that are good live and look great. The ones that aren't disappear slowly. Or sometimes not so slow.
The ones you want to go away are never the ones that go away fast enough.
Right.
And so you come up with a list of all these different plants that do well in our region.
And a lot of that can be found on our website. We're working on other vehicles to get that out there better through the website and other places.
And can you give us a few examples?
Sure. We trial about 250, 300 varieties of annuals every year. And we've got a top 10 list that we do every year. We've compiled that into a full list of all the 15 years of trialing we've done, and also even a Hall of Fame of our real favorites. Dahlia Mystic Illusion is on that list. Lantana, Citrus Gold, or Citrus Blend, and New Gold. Some of the new begonias, Whopper and Big, those two series. Great plants. And this is information that can be found very easily on the website.
How popular is the Plant Trials Day Symposium?
Very popular. This is our sixth year now, and I think five of the six have sold out. And this one is selling out faster than any of the others we've ever put out there. So we can hold 280 people, and that's a pretty good crowd, you know.
Alan, you're going to be talking about crazy plants for crazy gardeners. I just the title alone is a compelling title. Can you give us a preview of what that's going to be about?
Hey, listen, Mark, and anybody listening, if you're a gardener, you are by definition somewhat crazy. So we'll just go with that to begin with. I mean, you still probably believe in catalogs. Having said that, we are a very tough bunch. And one of the things that we never believe is that we can't grow something. And so, and we also believe that what I'm growing is probably the greatest plant since sliced bread. So I got to talk about, rather than talk about Scott's Whopper begonias and lantanas, I got to talk about really cool plants. Stuff you can get to. I don't mean it's eyeball plants. I got to talk about some plants are so much better than others. You know, I'm going to talk about new Vernonias, which are one of our natives. I'm going to talk about what's happening with the greatest new hellebores, which gardeners love. So they're somewhat better plants than in the crazy stuff. Some of these nutsy vines that I grow, and there are really some cool things like Jack's Beanstalk. I'm going to talk about Jack's Beanstalk, which if anybody has, I mean, I'm not kidding.
That's an interesting name.
I weigh too much for it.
Well, you see this thing, I'll bring some seeds too, so people can have some. But anyway, we're just going to have fun. We're going to talk about plants you can grow, and here's a few plants you ought to try. And because we're all, I say, like to experiment a wee bit.
Alan, how long have you been involved in horticulture?
Well, I've been involved since about, well, 19, or mid-70s, I guess. 30 some odd years. I'm only 25, but so I've been involved for quite a while, and I started with a big research program, and I did a lot of research, and still, well, I just retired recently, and then I did trials like Scott did as well, and I've been introducing new plants and writing a few books and putting an app together. So there's a lot of cool things going on.
A few books, I think it's like 17, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's about right, actually.
You lost track.
Yeah.
And you're putting an app together?
Yeah, I'm going to show this at the get together. This is the coolest thing ever. It's an app for anybody who touches plants, whether it's a gardener, a designer, a landscaper, a retailer, anybody who touches plants. This is an app on your phone or your tablet. Take with you. It not only talks about great annuals, great perennials, shrubs, vegetables, etc., but also the solutions for deer, pollinators, veggiescaping or foodscaping. So it's really cool, and it goes on your phone, and it's sold a ton already. But there's so many people that don't know about it just because it's hard to get that information out. But it's the only what I call third-person app out there. I'm not selling you anything. You can buy an app for $5, but that's it. I'm not selling anybody's plants, anybody's magazines. I don't want your email. And it is really good to have.
Interesting.
And we'll discuss that then, yeah.
So, Alan, your book is Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots, the stories behind the common names of some of our favorite plants. So I thought we could ask you about some of the names. Forget-Me-Nots, how did that name come about?
Well, all these stories, Mark, are really so interesting. And Scott probably does a lot of this too. If you look at how begonia got its name, or the genus Lantana got its name, it's pretty well known. It's named after a person or a place or a thing, or somebody who thought it looked like something. So the botanical names are pretty well established as to where they got their names. The common names, as some purists will say, should never even be spoken, because gosh, a common name in Cincinnati may be a different common name in Dayton, Ohio or something. But the fact is, common names are what people want to talk about. You know, they just do. They don't want to talk about epimedium. They want to talk about barrenwort. They don't want to talk about pulmonaria. They want to talk about lungwort. So, I started looking into where these names came from, and it was quite interesting. Forget-me-nots being one of them, where, you know, there's a half a dozen stories, and many of them are lores. They're just stories. And so in the book, I tried to choose no more than two on any one, because it gets confusing. But many of them are herbal. Forget-me-nots was supposedly two, you know, again, supposedly it's a cool story, if you can think about it, a raging river and two lovers, one on either side. And the young man jumped in to get to the other side, and this was in Europe. And when he almost got to the other side, he just couldn't make it, but he grabbed at the bank. And as he grabbed at the bank where the girl was, he pulled some flowers out and ended up pulling up forget-me-nots, or what we call myosotis. And as he wandered, unfortunately, down the river, he held them up and said, "Forget-me-not. Forget-me-not." And there's a number of stories about, you know, cool things like that. And where, you know, where dogwood gets its name has nothing to do with dogs. You know, I got stories of carrots and potatoes, and really, it's just fun. It's fun. It's storytelling is just one of those lost arts, and I am going to bore people to death.
Well, no, you got me curious, though, Alan. Dogwoods, got nothing to do with dogs. I mean, where'd that name come from?
Nothing to do with dogs. Nothing to do with dogs. Dogwood, if you have got a dogwood in your garden, you know that the wood is very, very hard. And dogwood, by the natives, was used for making sharp sticks, which we knew as daggers. And it was called the dagwood tree for years and years and years. And as early English was called dagwood tree for the sharp sticks and the various implements made from a dogwood wood. And over the years, that Dagwood name simply got changed somehow, as languages do, to Dogwood. And as the name Dogwood was established out there, people then said, well, gee, it must do with dogs. So they would wash their dogs in a solution made with dogwood bark and water for mange and things. All it did is drown the damn dog. It didn't do anything for it. But that's so, you know, sometimes you get a name because of something. Some people believe that the name must mean something. But it had to do with the wood, as in dagger. And it became the Dagwood tree.
And we will continue our conversation. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. WVXU, I'm Mark Haney. Here to give us a preview of the Cincinnati Zoo's Plant Trials Day is one of this year's speakers, researcher and author Dr. Alan Armitage. His latest book is Of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots, the stories behind the common names of some of our favorite plants. Also joining us is Cincinnati Zoo horticulturist and Taking Root chairman Scott Berline. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Alan, do you have a favorite plant?
A favorite plant? Well, if you ask any gardener what their favorite plant is, it's probably the one that looks good right now. But, you know, if I had to say, I often ask about my favorite plant, which really means what would I recommend to my daughter? Because she's going to make me pay for it. And I guess if I do a spring plant, it'll probably be one of the hellebores. I think hellebores are the unsung heroes of the spring garden. The new breeding on hellebores, which we know as Lenten roses, the new breeding is just unbelievable. And there's variegated forms of them, and there's forms that the flowers stay straight up and look you right in the eye. I mean, so I think that's my newest kick right now. Although I have a ton of favorite plants, but that's the one I recommend because the deer don't eat it, tolerate shade. It's beautiful. And it looks good all season. I mean, even when the flowers are done.
Okay, it's your turn, Scott.
Oh, I was afraid you'd do that.
I got to know what your favorite plant is. You have these beautiful botanical gardens at the zoo. So surely there's something in there.
And I'm going to pick one of the most diminutive plants that's there, but one of my absolute favorites, right in line with Lenten roses because it's a spring plant that's deer proof. Alan can probably guess it already, but epimediums.
Pretty cool.
They're just great, great, easy plants that they're ones you kind of have to get on your hands and knees to fully appreciate because they're down on the ground and the flowers are just kind of poke out. But they're worth the extra effort to view because they are just so nice.
Epimediums. What would be the common name for those?
Barrenwort.
Barrenwort.
Alan, what's the meaning of that?
Oh, it's cool. There's two common names, Mark. And again, I know this is a family show. The first one is Barrenwort because truly, this was the first drug, the first plant used for quote-unquote fertility for barren women. And it became known as Barrenwort. When you see the term wart, W-O-R-T means useful for. But its other name, it was discovered, this is a Japanese plant, and it was discovered in fields where goats would be put. And when the goats started eating the epimedium, all of a sudden there were a ton of little goatlets, little baby goats everywhere. And it turned out that the epimedium kind of got the goats all randy. So if you go, and I can't make any of this stuff up, guys. If you go into your kind of organic food store today and you go to that shelf of herbal medicines, you will find epimedium there under the name horny goat's weed. That's what it's called, horny goat's weed, and it's for the same thing as a little blue pill. It is quite amazing.
The world of plants is fascinating.
It really is. It never stops.
More to this than you realize.
Yeah, we got to be careful there. There are a lot of dirty old men smoking cigars in back rooms when plants are named. I'm convinced of it.
Are you okay? That explains a lot. Scott, tell us about some of the other speakers and other topics that you're going to have.
Yeah, we've got some great speakers coming. Tim Wood, probably a friend of yours, isn't he, Alan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he is at the center of the vortex of shrub breeding or close to it at any rate, in that world. So we will learn a lot about some of the many new and exciting shrubs coming down the pipeline. And my friend Mark Wessel, his talk probably won't be that good, but he's one of my best friends. It'll be great. He's going to talk about how he does a lot of traveling to go find good plants to bring to market. So he goes to a lot of trials programs. He goes to a lot of farms, a lot of cool stuff. Jim Now, he's been with Ball Flora for probably 40 years and just a wealth of knowledge on annuals and how to use them in gardens. So he's coming down and talking about that. And then we also have Deborah Hardwick, who is just up the road in Columbus, and turns out she's one of the top clematis experts in the world. So she's going to come down and talk about all things clematis.
Cool.
Then you got one, museum quality plants.
Oh, Irvin, I forgot about Irvin. I always forget somebody.
And that title, that's museum quality plants. I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, he works at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, which is an Olmsted designed park that does a lot of great horticulture there. And Irvin's one of those Renaissance type guys. He loves everything from tropical plants to trees and everything in between, and really loves color. A lot of really high impact plants. And he is one of the funniest speakers you'll ever hear. So we're really glad to have him. A lot of good information and entertaining.
And that's on August 31st.
August 31st.
Right? August 31st. Okay.
Yeah.
And how do people get registered for that, Scott?
Go to the website, go to the CincinnatiZoo.org website, go to gardens, go to botanical events, and you can get more information and register right there.
Yeah. I believe we have a link to that as well at WVXU.org. So, Alan, I wanted to ask you about when you look at the future of horticulture and where it's headed, how is the industry doing at attracting young people? Do you have any concerns about the future of horticulture?
The answer is, well, and the short answer is no. It doesn't mean I haven't got some concerns in that it's going to be a bumpy road, but I am quite optimistic about the industry. It's certainly changed already, and it's going to change even more. I mean, Mark, if you ask yourself, where is the garden going to be? The garden is tomorrow. The garden is the deck. The garden is the patio, the veranda, the near the barbecue pit. The garden is outdoor living. That's changed dramatically from, grandma's catalpa tree that with the veggies in the back. And so I think the young people, so to speak, whatever that means anymore, I don't know what a young person is, but the young people are certainly going to garden, and we just have to wait for them to grow up a little bit. But when they have a place to garden, we're going to see a lot more containers, a lot more baskets, a lot more vegetables on the deck than we're seeing in the last 10 years. So that part of gardening is changing. As far as the industry is concerned, attracting horticulturists, young people to go into horticulture has always been difficult. I mean, 9 out of 10 counselors in high school don't even know what horticulture is. And so it's hard to get them counseled to say this. I mean, you can't walk anywhere outside without seeing horticulture. Ornamental horticulture is everywhere. It's probably in Ohio and certainly in Georgia and certainly in Michigan. It's number 2 or 3 most important agricultural product. But nobody knows what it is because it's just gardening. So to answer your question, sure, I see it's going to be tougher to get young people in, but we've always had that challenge. And I think that while we may not be selling, a whole flat of begonias, we're selling maybe 3 or 4, but we're selling them to a lot more people. I can go on forever here about who's got the power and the box stores are taking over and is that good or bad, la-di-da, but I'm optimistic. I really am.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it seems like we're kind of in a low end of the web right now. And, a lot of the university programs are kind of withering and this and that. But the need for horticulture is great, and it's only going to get more and more great. We're going to need it more and more as we go forward. Our cities, suburbs, we just need it everywhere for environmental, economic, and social reasons. So I think the prospects for young people going into horticulture are going to be very, very good, and then it'll come back around. I'm certainly hoping that's the way it goes.
Yeah, Alan, are there more?
Are suffering.
Yeah, are there more plant enthusiasts out there than we might think?
No. In some respects, I mean the
plant, never enough.
If Scott gives a talk, or we're going to go, I don't know what the Cincinnati program is going to look like. When I look at the audience, and most of the audiences are, you know, 40 is at the young end, 50 is still youngish, and 60 and 70 is not uncommon. So, you know, we got to get the young people. But, gosh, I don't remember when a whole lot of young people were at any of these conferences. So the enthusiasts are still enthusiastic. I really believe it. And there's young people there, and they say whatever young means, 40 years old or young mothers or young whatevers. They're there, and their enthusiasm is catching. It's just that, for sure, there's not as many garden clubs and plant associations as there used to be, no doubt.
It's interesting being at the zoo where 90% of the people are young, usually young mothers pushing strollers, basically, and the tremendous amount of appreciation they have for the gardens there. The many times they stop and take pictures of flowers, prop a kid up in front of flowers. I think it's there. I'm with Alan on this. It's just people are moving into their houses in their 30s now and not in their 20s or maybe even their 40s.
Right. Alan and Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Certainly.
Researcher and author Dr. Alan Armitage. His latest book is Of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots. Also joining us is Cincinnati Zoo horticulturist and Taking Root Chairman Scott Berline. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Plant Trials Day takes place Thursday, August 31st. The registration ends August 27th at midnight, and there's a link to more information at wvxu.org. Coming up, how to have that difficult but important end-of-life conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.